You're listening to Health Savvy You, where understanding health starts with you. I'm Dr. Navjot Butter, a dental surgeon, health communication epidemiologist, and your friend on the journey to better health literacy. In every episode, I break down complex health info, teach you how to spot fake health tips, and share practical tools to help you think clearly, ask smarter questions, and make confident health choices. Keep listening, because becoming healthier shouldn't feel out of reach. It should feel empowering.
Welcome to another episode of Health Savvy You. We are in our second module discussing how health science works. If you have just joined our Health Savvy Club, please make sure you also check out our previous module on health misinformation. Today, we are on chapter 3 of how health science works, and we will learn what scientific evidence is and why one study or few studies are not enough. But before we dive into why one or two studies can stand on their own as solid evidence, let's first talk about the different kinds of studies that scientists do. Because not all studies are created equal. Each one gives us a piece of the puzzle, but none of them on their own tell the whole story. The first big type of study we often hear about are the randomized controlled trials, or RCTs. These are known as the gold standard for testing things like new medicines or procedures. People in the study are randomly assigned, kind of like flipping a coin to either get the treatment being tested or not. That way, we reduce bias and make sure the results aren't just because of chance or some hidden factor. The strength of RCTs is that they are designed to show cause and effect. We want to make sure that people are getting better, effect, because of the treatment, cause, and not as chance or placebo. But here's the catch. RCTs are often done with a very specific group of people in controlled setting. That means the result might not always apply to everyone in the real world. They are also sometimes very expensive to do and may take a long time. In other cases, they may not be ethical to do, and in yet other cases, they may not be the best option, such as when comparing different kinds of diets. So we don't have RCTs for everything we'd like to test. Then we have observational studies. These are more like scientists being detectives, watching what happens in the real world without changing anything. For example, they might compare people who exercise regularly with those who don't to see if there's a difference in their health outcomes. Observational studies are powerful for spotting patterns, especially for things we can't ethically test in an RCT, like smoking. I mean, just for the sake of science, no one's going to randomly assign people to smoke for 20 years to see what happens, right? Enters observational studies. But the limitation here is that observational studies can't always prove cause and effect. There may be other hidden factors influencing the results, what researchers call confounding. For example, someone who smokes may also have a more stressful life, and it becomes really hard to know if the bad health outcomes are because of smoking or because of stress. Scientists have to thus control for such confounders, which may not always be perfectly possible. Next, we have got case-controlled studies. We use them when we want to study a bad outcome. We can hope or ask people to get unhealthy or die for the sake of science. So for these conditions, we usually start with people who already have that condition, say a heart disease, and then look backwards to compare them with the people who don't have it. Researchers ask, what was different between these two groups over this time? Case-controlled studies are helpful when a disease is rare or takes a long time to develop, but they rely heavily on memory and old records, which might make data a bit shaky. There are also cohort studies, which instead of looking backwards, follow a group of people forward in time. Imagine we start with a group of young adults today, some who eat vegetables and some who don't, and we check over the years to see who develops chronic diseases. Cohort studies can give so much information, but because they run for years, they're costly and people might sometimes drop out, which may affect results. Then there are basic science studies, the ones done in labs with cells, tissues, or animals. They help us understand the why and how behind the health. For example, if a drug lowers blood pressure in mice, that's exciting, but it doesn't mean it will work in humans too. These studies are like the first sparks of ideas. They generate hypotheses, but they are not the final word. Now, all of these are what we call as primary studies, research that collects new data. But there's another layer that's crucial, systematic reviews and meta-analysis. These are not just one more study. They are structured efforts to pull together all the studies on the topic, weigh their quality, and make sense of the bigger picture. Systematic reviews are called critical links in the great chain of evidence. They help us sort through the noise, highlight consistent findings, and point out gaps. Without them, we risk getting the whiplash from every new study that hits the headlines. Here's what's important for us. Every kind of study has its strengths, and every kind has weaknesses. No single study is perfect, and no single study can answer every question. That's why science doesn't stop at one study or one headline. It's an ongoing process of testing, comparing, and building a body of evidence that we can trust. So when we hear about a new study that seems to prove something dramatic, like coffee cures cancer or chocolate makes us live longer, it's worth exploring. Is this an RCT, an observational study? Was it big enough? Was it repeated? And most importantly, has it been looked at alongside all the other studies out there? Because science is not about falling in love with one shining finding. It is about assembling the full puzzle, piece by piece, until the picture becomes clear. So now that we have walked through different kinds of studies, let's get into why one or few studies, no matter how well done, just can't be considered solid evidence on their own. The first big reason is chance. Even when a study is carefully designed, sometimes results just happen randomly. Imagine flipping a coin 10 times. We'd expect 5 heads and 5 tails, but sometimes we might get 7 heads or even all 10 heads. That doesn't mean the coin is magical, it just means randomness showed up. In the same way, a single study can show a surprising effect just because of chance, not because it's really there. The second reason is bias. Every study has potential blind spots. Maybe the group of people studied wasn't diverse enough, or maybe the researchers unintentionally nudged the results in one direction. Bias can creep in through who gets into the study, or how the data is collected, or even how survey questions were asked. Bias can creep in from so many directions in the study. A single study doesn't give us much protection against it. It's like listening to one person's version of story. One study could be like a rumor. So we need multiple voices before we know what really happens. Another reason is context. Sometimes studies happen in very specific conditions. An RCT on a new drug might involve middle-aged volunteers in one country, but that doesn't mean the results apply to children or older adults or people in another part of the world. How a drug reacts in men might not apply to women. Observational studies might show that people in certain cities have lower disease rates, but it may be that's because of their diet or their air quality or something else unique to that place that we missed in one study. Without replication across different settings, we can't assume the findings are universal. Then there's the issue of sample size. Small studies can be helpful for generating ideas, but they often don't have enough participants to show reliable patterns. If we test a diet on 30 people and say 5 lose weight, is that really proof it works? Or could it be just coincidence? Larger studies help smooth out these bumps, but even then we need multiple studies pointing in the same direction. Another big thing is reproducibility. One time is just not enough. If other researchers try the same study and don't get the same results, it means we need to dig in more. Science is about repeatability. Think about baking. The only reason we know adding yeast makes bread rise higher is because we see it happen almost every time we add yeast to the dough. But if someone says adding cinnamon puffs the bread up, you wouldn't believe it if it didn't happen for you, right? We also have to remember publication bias. Studies with exciting or dramatic findings are more likely to get published than studies that find no effect. That means a single study we hear about in the news may not reflect the full picture. For every breakthrough headline, there may be many other quiet studies that didn't find anything but never made it into news. What if one said coffee is healthy for heart, but there are 20 others that didn't find any relation between heart health and coffee drinking, but these were never covered by headlines? Another important reason is complexity. Health outcomes are rarely caused by one single factor. Take heart disease. Diet plays a role, but so do genetics, stress, physical activity, and many other things. A single study that looks only at, say, nut consumption can't capture the whole picture. Without multiple studies covering different angles, we risk oversimplifying something that's actually very complex. This is also the reason why lab studies do not prove the final evidence about how human health works. What we see in labs is much more simpler than the complexity of human body. And then there's the danger of false confidence. Numbers can be convincing, but they are not always telling the truth if the methods behind the studies aren't strong or the sample size is too narrow or too big. When we latch on to one study, we might end up believing something that later turns out to be false. Let's ground this in a real-world example. If you go online and look up for studies on, let's say, coffee and cancer, you will find all sorts of things. Some studies have said coffee increases cancer risk. Others have said it decreases cancer risk. If we took just one of those studies, we'd all be panicking or celebrating unnecessarily. Because at this time, we are still building confidence on the link between coffee and cancer. It's not enough to have one clue. Science works like detective work. We need many clues from different angles before we can close the case. So the takeaway for us is this. One or two studies can be interesting, even exciting. They spark ideas, they get the conversation going, but they are the beginning of the evidence, not the end. Reliable science builds strength by stacking studies on top of each other, checking for consistency, ruling out chance and bias, and then confirming with the real-world outcomes. When we see the bigger body of evidence, that's when we can feel confident. That's how we know vaccines really prevent diseases or seatbelts save lives. Not because one single study, but because of hundreds all pointing in the same direction. So how is scientific evidence actually built? How do scientists and health professionals decide what is good versus not for our health when there are so many studies out there with many different results pointing in different directions? Let's understand the process of building scientific evidence, and it helps to imagine a giant jigsaw puzzle. Each study is like one piece of the puzzle. Some are small and simple. Others are big and detailed, and a few may even look like they don't belong at first. On their own, no single piece shows the whole picture, but when we lay out many pieces together, patterns start to form and we can finally see the image clearly. It all starts with primary studies, a starting point. A lab experiment might show how a chemical affects cells. A clinical trial might test whether a new vaccine protects against disease. An observational study might track people's habits and see who gets sick over time. Each of these gives us one piece of the puzzle. But at the beginning, the pieces can feel scattered. One study might suggest a benefit, another can show no effect, and yet another could hint at a possible harm. This is normal. Science is often messy when it starts. The next step is replication. When different researchers in different places with different groups of people run similar studies, we start to see whether the findings hold up. If results keep repeating across contexts, we know those puzzle pieces probably belong in the same picture. If they don't repeat, it tells us we need to look closer. Maybe the study design was weak. Maybe the effect only shows up in certain situations, or maybe the final result was just due to chance. Then comes synthesis. Instead of staring at one piece, systematic reviews and meta-analysis spread all the pieces on the table. They check which ones are reliable, which ones fit and which ones don't, and how they connect to each other. Sometimes the pieces line up beautifully. Other times we realize we are missing sections and that some studies point in opposite directions. The strength of synthesis is that it doesn't ignore those conflicts. It helps us understand why they happen. Maybe smaller studies found an effect, but larger ones didn't. Maybe results varied by age, gender, or geography. Putting the puzzle together helps reveal those details. When building evidence, scientists know that not every piece of the puzzle is perfect. Some studies are poorly designed. Others are too small to be conclusive. Some get published because their results were exciting, while quieter studies with no effect results are left out. That's why evidence building has to include quality checks. Systematic reviews don't just gather studies, they judge their strength. They ask, was the study big enough? Was it done fairly? Were the results consistent? This keeps the weaker pieces from misleading the whole picture. But evidence building doesn't stop at the research table. Public health also looks at real-world evidence. By this stage, we already have strong, consistent findings from research already. Real-world evidence simply shows how well those findings hold when applied broadly in daily life. For example, smoking and lung cancer. Laboratory studies showed how tobacco chemicals damaged cells, while observational studies tracked higher cancer rates in smokers compared to non-smokers. Over time, we saw trends in lung cancer following the trends in smoking. Real-world patterns confirmed the link beyond doubt. Another great example is vaccines. Clinical trials prove they work and are safe. But when millions are vaccinated and we see diseases like smallpox and polio virtually disappear in entire populations, that's real-world evidence reinforcing what the trials already told us. My mother has witnessed people with polio, and I have never met anyone who hasn't. It's the confirmation of a picture that's already clear. And finally, evidence is not frozen in time. As new studies are done, new pieces might get added. Sometimes the picture sharpens further, and sometimes it shifts. Nutrition is a good example. For years, fats were seen as harmful across the board. But as more studies piled up, a clearer image emerged. Some fats, like trans fats, are harmful, while others, like omega-3s, are beneficial. The puzzle changed shape as better pieces were added. In the end, building scientific evidence is about accumulation, comparison, and confirmation. One study starts the conversation. Replication tests if it holds. Synthesis pulls the threads together. Quality checks make sure the strongest evidence carries more weight. The real-world evidence shows us the outcomes in daily life. That's why in public health, when we say something is evidence-based, we don't mean it came from a single flashy headline. We mean that hundreds of puzzle pieces have been laid out, tested, and connected until the picture is strong and reliable. That's how we know vaccines protect us, clean water saves life, and that smoking causes cancer. And the beauty is, once the picture is clear, it doesn't just live in journals. It shapes policies, guides doctors, and protects communities. It's the science puzzle, completed piece by piece, turning knowledge into healthier lives for all of us. Now, in the last section of this episode, let's discuss the most important bit, what actually goes wrong when we treat one or two studies like they are the final word. This matters because the choices we make as people, patients, communities can be shaped by a single headline. Imagine hearing that a new supplement has been shown in a study to boost your immunity. It sounds exciting, and when your favorite influencer swears by it, you may rush to buy it, take large doses, and share it with friends. But that study might have been small or done in animals or not yet tested against long-term side effects. The harm, instead of helping, the supplement could damage your liver, interact with other medications, or just waste your money. The same goes for strict diets that suddenly trend after one study suggests benefits. They can leave people deprived of important nutrients or anxious about food. Acting on single studies means we risk our health on evidence that hasn't yet been tested enough. Misinformation is one of the biggest harms. When someone online says, look, there are studies showing this, people often assume that means the claim is proven. But anyone can cherry pick one or two studies to prove almost anything. that coffee can cure cancer, that vaccines don't work, that certain foods are poison. In truth, those studies may be low quality, taken out of context, or even contradicted by stronger evidence. The misuse of single studies has fueled myths about COVID-19, about nutrition, chronic diseases, and once misinformation spreads, as we learned in our health misinformation module, it is sticky and very hard to correct. When people spend their hard-earned money on products and treatments that were hyped up from one study, that money is gone forever. Supplements, devices, natural cures sold on flimsy evidence don't come cheap. And when our energy and money goes into chasing the newest study-driven fads, we sometimes forget what already has decades of proof behind it. Walking, eating fruits and vegetables, getting enough sleep, using vaccines are reliable ways to protect health. If a community gets swept up in the next big thing, such as a detox juice, they can lose sight of basics that make the biggest difference. That lost time matters, especially when preventing diseases is about steady habits and not quick fixes. When single studies are used to push public behavior, whole groups can end up making risky choices together. Think about a community that all jumps in onto a restrictive diet and ends up with children not getting enough nutrients. These choices can affect not just individuals, but health of everyone around them. Herd immunity, food systems, local healthcare systems, all can be disrupted by collective action based on shaky evidence. Single studies can spark both false hope and unnecessary fear. A headline might suggest a new cure for a chronic illness. People feel hopeful, share it widely, plan for a different future. Then nothing comes of it. That crash can hold. On the flip side, a single study might make people afraid of a proven health strategy. Living with avoidable fear or disappointment chips away at our well-being too. Science itself isn't broken when studies seem to disagree. That's actually how science works, testing and retesting ideas. But when early findings are treated as settled truth in public space, and then later studies refine or overdone them, people feel cheated. It sounds like scientists keep changing their minds. The problem isn't the science changing. It's that the first shaky steps were presented by headlines as if it were the destination. Over time, this creates doubt. Can I believe anything I hear? That doubt can make people hesitant about even the most solid evidence. So what's our lesson here? It's not that single studies are bad. In fact, single studies are where science starts. They are the sparks, but sparks aren't a steady flame. Building evidence takes many sparks, tested and retested, until we can see the full fire. The harm comes when we mistake the spark for the fire itself. This brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening and thinking this through with me. Next time, we will continue the thread by asking, is doing my own research a good idea? As you can already sense, that conversation flows directly out of what we have just talked about. How single studies can be misused, and how we each can be smarter and safer in the way we seek our answers. If this episode resonated with you, please subscribe so the next one drops right into your feed. Follow along and share it with someone who's ever sent you the headline with the words, "A study shows," and help us grow this health savvy community. Until next time, stay savvy, stay healthy.
Thank you for tuning into Health Savvy You. I hope today's episode brought you one step closer to feeling confident, curious, and in control of your health. If you found this episode helpful, share it with someone you care about. Keep learning and remember, health literacy is for everyone, including you. Be sure to follow or subscribe so you never miss a new episode. I have got more great conversations coming your way. See you next time, and until then, stay savvy, stay healthy.